It's 2 o'clock and time for your appointment with the Reluctant Therapist. What's on your mind today, Elizabeth?
Oh, hello, Donna. Today I am thinking about kind of the state of women's healthcare, which is a very giant topic, but just thinking about how it is. Well, for many reasons. One, I know so many people who have no healthcare right now, and that's really concerning to me because we're all of a certain age in my women's group of friends. We're needing different kinds of healthcare, really needing to have those yearly checkups. And then for my daughter and her children, really need to have access to good healthcare. I don't know if I have my list of things that I'm most concerned about in the world right now, but I would think this access to healthcare is really close to the top, because it's such a specific need and doesn't seem like it should be something that is limited or we have limited access to. And so I'm thinking about that. How did we get to a place where you have like secret ways that you can get information about your health and many people are locked out? That's on my mind. I don't know how to fix that. And I don't know how to keep it from getting buried under all of the other things that we are concerned about as a cold. Why it doesn't seem to come up at all that people have lost their access to healthcare and then lost access to good clinicians. And I'm just going to say this off the top because it's my wish and my intention for the universe for the show right now, that if I got to make the rules, I think it would be great to have anyone who is interested, young people who are interested, who feel like they had a calling to the healing arts, were able to take the MCAT, which is the medical test to get into medical school. If they had a desire, a calling, a vocation, anyone can take it, no cost to them. And if they get a certain score on the MCATs, they get to go to medical school paid for by the government. And that way, you have more people who go into the helping professions. You actually elevate the experience of people who don't have access to going to medical school, who can't even afford to take the MCAT, let alone what it costs to spend 7 to 10 years getting trained to be a physician. And it elevates the entire culture. Like, everyone benefits from something like that because we're losing medical professionals just constantly, and we have medical deserts all over. And so to me, that seems like a fix for a country that has more money than it really pretends to. Clearly we have, you know, a giant military, that we should be able to do that. So that is my wish that I put out. If that is the thing that we needed to heal, was that people felt like they could be cared for, I would want to have access to training generations of medical professionals paid for by the government so that they had an opportunity to be healers. That's one. The other thing that's on my mind is the whole community of women itself and how, as a gender, I'm thinking about my words on that, as a gender, we're 51% of the population. And I remember reading years ago that prior to the Salem witch trials, which was kind of a worldwide, not just in Salem, but the elimination of women healers all around the world, with that, we lost this innate knowledge of how to cure and care for health in profound ways, using herbs, different treatments, and different formulas, that the women who were burned as supposedly being witches really were the ones carrying all of the knowledge about healing. And with that decimation of these women healers, we lost all of that knowledge. And today, we still have not even gained half back of the knowledge that once was known by women of how to use the natural pieces of our environment, ingredients of our environment, to heal. And I want to know if that's true. And if it is true, then how do we elevate that knowledge as well? Because women as healers heal not only all people, but have a special insight on how to work with other women. And how do we have access for women to get information about their own personal health that's not always steeped in our Western model of what good health looks like? because I don't know, Donna, about you, but there's a few things I enjoy watching. One of them is Jeopardy. And every commercial on Jeopardy has something to do with a medication that makes me feel 100 years old. It's every single one. And other shows like the Super Bowl or different sporting events, it's all medications, always Western medications that are fussed at, you know, trying to help people with different ailments. And of course, you know, it's laughable how many side effects every single one of them have. And I think part of the problem I have is that there's plenty of room and conversations for that Western style of addressing medical issues. But when we talk about more natural or holistic or even magical ways of addressing women's health in particular, it gets pooh-poohed as kind of a wooey thing. And even with myself, when I talk about women's health or some alternative form of healing, I'll find myself saying to my friends, well, my wooey side or my wooey friends will say this. So I'm even also at fault for this, for not giving the correct amount of respect to the healing knowledge of herbalists and faith healers and naturopath healers and women's spirituality healers. So because of that, I have a guest in the studio today. Her name is Allison Lorne, and she is a registered nurse, but also a certified nurse midwife. And she has over 25 years experience, not only in labor, delivery, and babies, but she also has a knack and a talent for healing women in the transitions of perimenopause and menopause, which is like the black hole or the Bermuda Triangle of women's health, where there's very little information. And so we're going to talk about her experiences and how she found her path through medicine and what she sees as our current opportunities for women to learn about self-care in a health desert and in a place that focuses more on either men's health or Western models. So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you'll be invited to be part of the conversation today as well. Our number is 805-781-3875. Also find me on Facebook or Instagram and leave me a message there. And I know I don't post, but I do read messages when they do come in. So if you need to get a hold of me, you can do that or send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast through Spotify, NPR Podcasts, Apple Podcasts. If you do find the show, subscribe, leave a review, which helps other people find the show, and then you can listen at your convenience. But right now, we're going to take a quick break and come back and start our conversation right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Now that the light is fading, silver and purple at twilight, scenes of the day us, bright as the fire is burning bright, blue as the sky above the lake, and blue the water flowing, white birch drooping on the shore, her leaves of emerald glowing. The night is robed in spangled black, and so...
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. Allison, thank you so much for being my guest today.
I'm so happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me. I'm a longtime listener, and I want to tell you that I've been to every Live Oak over the last 12 years. Love KCBX and love your show. Thanks for having
me.
Thank
you. Yeah. Well, it's going to be a wonderful Live Oak this year as well. Allison is a registered nurse, certified midwife, and you have worked delivering babies, but have kind of pivoted your practice over the last years to focusing on women's health in the transition of perimenopause and menopause. I want to get to how this whole process went for you working through your professional career. So please explain to me how you found your way to doing this work. What was the genesis? How did you start You know, did you grow up saying I want to be a nurse someday? Or
I grew up saying I wanted to be a doctor.
Oh, okay.
So I always knew I was going to be a healer of sorts. And getting into University of California, Santa Cruz, and as a biology major with a pre-med track,
wow.
I became disillusioned with Western medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I had an abortion when I was 17 years old. And that really got me into seeking support in women's health. Mm-hmm. And I realized how much of a need there was for to serve women in
even
this
at 17 or 18 through that experience.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I say women's health is political just by nature, right? Access to healthcare, abortion access is right up there with my drive to want to serve women. So I jumped into wanting to heal women in particular, and becoming a nurse and a nurse midwife to me felt like the most grassroots path mm-hmm. to working with women directly in a way that focuses on helping the body maintain its balance, whereas medicine often is a reductionist model that looks at what's wrong with the body and views the body as more of like a machine and where it's breaking down.
Yes.
Nursing really works to uphold function. Right, like let's maintain what we have. And Florence Nightingale being one of the heroes of early nursing, that we need sunlight. We need access to windows to look out the window. We need hand washing and hygiene. And all of these things are just as important to support the soul in the body as it is breaking down the physiology and looking at exactly what's wrong in the body.
Was it almost a radical thing to pivot then from the doctor track to becoming a nurse?
I think I was young enough that it was all still very fluid and open. Mm-hmm. And I was into the dead and a hippie at the time. And it just felt like this is much more rootsy. Mm-hmm. I was into the natural world, into plants and herbalism. And this felt like a path that supported those pursuits. And God bless every doctor out there, because it is such a rigorous path mm-hmm. to mm-hmm. become a medical doctor. And I was never very good at chemistry.
That'd probably be an important part of the path.
Yeah, it's essential. Mm-hmm. So I've had a wonderful career of working in collaboration and cooperation with doctors. Mm-hmm. We have a ton of excellent doctors in our area.
We would like more to help support them too.
Yes.
So they don't feel so overburdened with our healthcare.
Yes, yes, clearly. And then our rural setting, right? We realize when you actually need healthcare how rural we are.
Mm-hmm.
But what can we do to help prevent needing acute care? How can we work in prevention and uphold the body's functioning? And this is where my private practice has really gone in the last several years. Let's talk about body, mind, and spirit, right? Let's talk about the emotional body. Let's talk about the human need for spiritual meaning in our lives, mm-hmm. as well as balancing hormones, as well as looking at disease and diagnosis and what can we do to treat you to get you into optimum health.
So you went to UC Santa Cruz and you went to Humboldt. And that's where you were working as a birthing midwife and earned your registered nurse degree. And then you moved to a convent
yes.
on the border of Texas and Mexico and were working at the Holy Family Birth. So it sounds like at the beginning of your career, you were very much focused on the birth piece of the midwife.
Oh, certainly. That was that was my passion. And in the beginning of my career, I thought, I'm going to do this forever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The average lifespan of a certified nurse midwife doing births is only 5 years.
Because of the time that goes into that?
The burnout rate is really high.
That's too bad.
Yes. So there's so many of us that are looking to pivot our skill set into a way that we can still work with patients in a way that feels much more sustainable for the provider. Current medical systems don't do a great job of serving providers or patients for that matter. Yeah, so when we're really unsupported and working in harsh conditions, and we see that right now with the Kaiser nurses on strike and unions really working for adequate staffing ratios, mm-hmm. Benefits and whatnot, we know that providers aren't well supported in the current system. Mm-hmm. So it's there's a lot to be done to help both patient and provider when we're looking at trying to make improvements.
So through your years as being a birth midwife, and I'm saying birth midwife because what I learned from you is that a midwife is not just someone who doulas birth or that helps with birth. And I always thought that that was the definition of a midwife, was always just with birth. So I'm saying birth midwife. I have two parts of this. What was the difference between working, you know, in Denver as a labor and delivery nurse and working at the Holy Trinity Birth Center at the convent?
Yeah, so I went to Holy Family Birth Center as an RN, as a volunteer nurse. And I had been doing home birth before that. So when I got down to the border, the Mexico-Texas border, this is a Mecca birth center in the country because it's run by nurse midwives and it's providing indigent care and it's a freestanding birth center. So
what does that mean?
Mm-hmm, it's outside of a hospital.
Oh, okay.
Right? Just like Intimate Journeys down the street.
Which I'm not familiar with.
Yes. Aaron runs Intimate Journeys Birth Center, which is just a stone's throw away from where we are right now in the station. Freestanding birth center, one that is outside of the hospital.
And different than a home birth because you're not at home.
Right, because you're not at home. Okay. Right, exactly. And so this Holy Family is well known as a charity-driven birth center. And after I graduated nursing school, I knew I was going to go to midwifery school, but I wanted to get that birth center experience. So I went there for a year as a volunteer nurse and an AmeriCorps recipient before I went to Denver to get my nurse midwifery education in Denver.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm.
And so you spent 12 plus years doing that in Denver, and then you came out and worked for Planned Parenthood, who is near and dear to my heart, here in California. And then at what point in your career did you start to reach that burnout of labor and delivery and start to look for other ways to serve?
Yeah, I think it was a slow path. Looking back, I feel like there were a lot of turns, some that were foreseeable and others that were unexpected, mm-hmm. that got me to the place of being an entrepreneur and opening my own mm-hmm. business, which is hard work.
Yeah.
So I feel like a lot of us don't do that until we really need to do that.
Well, but it doesn't feel like healthcare also is an entrepreneurial business, mm-hmm. right? It always feels like it's attached to a formal medical practice.
Yes.
So did that, again, was that a radical move?
It's a radical move mm-hmm. because of the learning curve, so intense. We're not well prepared for that. Even though as a nurse practitioner, as a mid-level provider, we can go into practice for ourselves with our own license number, our own DEA number. There isn't a lot in school to prepare you for what it takes to open a business.
Yeah. Same with therapists.
Mm-hmm.
Very little education on what that is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so going out on your own, it really was born out of necessity because the care I like to deliver doesn't translate well to seeing 25 patients a day for 15-minute appointments. Mm-hmm. Now I really like to see people through a journey, ideally a 3-month journey to get started at least, where we know the interventions that we are beginning, we can follow and see how they're playing out, how the body is responding, and what kind of changes in this woman's life that she's wanting to see, mm-hmm. if what we're doing is really working and serving her in that way, or are we going to pivot and go a different direction? And there's so much more to the healing when we're talking about emotional support and spiritual support in that holistic model. It's not about just writing a prescription and saying, see you next year.
Right. Or in a month. I think that's one of the reasons I loved the midwife practice, because both of my daughters were born with midwife, with Sandy Rodriguez, who you and I both know. I hope you're listening, Sandy, because I love you so.
Love you, Sandy.
Because for me, having that non-medical birth was so important. And I 36 hours with Sandy by my side, that was so important, that all the care prior to that, you know, the 9 months of seeing her for a half hour at a time and talking about how I was feeling emotionally, because I was never had a child before. And I don't know if a lot of first-time moms get that kind of conversation. She didn't just look and see how the baby was doing, but she was checking in with me. How are my husband and I doing? How am I feeling about this process? And so I think that's such an important piece of the whole birthing experience, because we know so much now about how the fetus experiences being, you know, in the womb for those 9 months and how the mom's feelings are all in part of that. Like, we know these things. And I wonder why after, you know, outside of the birthing process, we stop connecting women's health to that same emotional journey. I don't know if that made sense, but we like somehow see that emotional, physical connection between, you know, baby and mother in the womb. But once a woman isn't giving birth, her health becomes so just more clinical.
Yeah. Yeah. We see, I mean, really birth, like you're birthing the whole family, yeah. right? Yeah. When we see the weight of it, we understand the importance of it. And we know that cortisol is getting to the baby, right? Adrenaline's getting to the baby. Oxytocin's getting to the baby. Like when we're talking about the hormonal landscape of a pregnant woman and we're realizing like, oh, this new life is on the receiving end of all these hormonal fluctuations, there's a weight to that. We understand the importance of wanting to give this kiddo the best chance at having a fresh slate, a clean slate to make the best life possible. And where's mom in all of that, right? After delivery, her progesterone crashes, her estrogen crashes. And this is why we see so much postpartum depression, right? And often women are isolated at that time. They really fall through the cracks. And there's a lot of attention on the newborn right after delivery, but often mom is left behind. So our society doesn't do a great job of serving mothers and helping to support them through those first few years, that postpartum period being the whole entire first year of a child's first birth.
The fourth trimester. If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and you're listening to my guest, Susan Lorne, nurse midwife. Now you know all of your certified nurse midwife, registered nurse. And how do you call your holistic practice?
Holistic healer.
And holistic healer. Mm-hmm. We'll go with that. And we're talking about the changes in women's healthcare that she's seen over her career. And that is that through line. It's almost like once women have given birth, the focus on the experience for women moves. And we're supposed to just kind of carry the weight of the world. Through everything and have the capacity to do that. And I also think, just as a diversion, that a lot of our postpartum issues, besides the physical experience for women, is the story women are being told that somehow you're going to have this child and go back to work in 6 weeks with a pre-pregnancy body as if nothing changed. And so the setup for women is failure because it's so unachievable. And no wonder they are depressed and feel panicked because they're told something that's unrealistic.
Yeah, and that's really where we start seeing that divorce between the mind and the body, right? Because my body is saying, I want to be with the baby. Yeah, I'm letting down. My breasts are producing milk. I want to be with my baby. And we're saying, buckle up, pull up your pants and yeah, put your chin up and get back to work. And we see this in the household, having to maintain the household, how much like that invisible labor and all the emotional labor of task management in the household falls to women. And where is the woman herself? So often in perimenopause, we see this coming back up. We see this menopausal rage coming forward. We're seeing more of the irritability, more of the body really starting to speak out and say, I need some attention. It's been too long that we've been bypassing the body and performing for others, even our loved ones. And where are
out of
you?
Love.
Out of love. Yeah, out of the kindness of our hearts.
And that drive.
And the need. Families need mothers. Children need their mothers. And we want that. We want to promote that. But is there a way that we can do that to teach people the skills to tap in and be aware of what their body's telling them, opening that line of communication, helping nurture that communication between mind and body so that mom knows to take some time for herself and that it's not a catch-up game 25 years later when kids are finally out of the house.
Which is what it feels like in a lot of ways. That you get on a toboggan or on the skeleton toboggan and you just hold your breath and get things done until everybody leaves. And once both my girls were settled, I feel like it's the first exhale I took. So I'd like to, I know you've transitioned, so we'll transition away from the midwife part, although I'm happy to talk about that more, the birthing. But I'd love you to talk about the role of midwives in women's health, because again, I was ignorant to the connection prior to meeting you. Have midwives always been focused on women's health care outside of just, not just, but all, the labor and delivery piece? Or well, are you a pioneer?
Yes and no.
Okay.
I love that you opened the show bringing up the witch trials. Yeah.
Was it correct?
Yeah. Thank you. I just led a retreat to Salem.
Oh, you did?
In October. Yes. And we went to visit a lot of the sites. Yeah. It was a pilgrimage of sorts to really honor these figures in history that stood up to the establishment and said, this is wrong. What's happening? Thank you to each one of them. And what we were seeing was this eradication of women's wisdom, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, land grab, politically driven land grab, and women became the targets. So with that, we lost so much women's wisdom. Before midwives, certified nurse midwives, licensed midwives, as we know them, the midwife was the wise woman, the sage femme. She was the woman.
Say that again.
The wise woman.
But then you said?
The sage femme. It's a French word that means wise woman.
Love that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. She was the healer. She was the herbalist. You would go to her house and she would come to your house when you were in labor, when you had a sick kid. Right? It was treating the whole family. Mm-hmm. These were the healers before we had physicians, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So when we are looking at American history and we're looking at the rise of the American Medical Association and we're looking at the patriarchy starting to come into medicine and taking healing out of the hands of women, midwives, granny midwives in the South, systematically taking childbirth out of the home and putting it into hospitals where we start seeing a rise in childbirth mortality, maternal mortality, of which the U.S. is 55th ranked in the world, right? So we still have that cross to bear, so to speak. We lost so much of the roots, grassroots, human-to-human wisdom that had been handed down and in the natural world and the natural order of using plants as medicine, right? And you can imagine a midwife coming to your house to do a birth. They're there for days.
Yeah.
They're living with you, essentially. And while they're there, they're taking care of the sick four-year-old that's running around with a runny nose. And it's a whole family a system of healthcare.
Yes.
So midwives back in the day versus nurse midwives now, we've formalized that education. We've created academic institutions. We've created licensure and certification. There's different paths to becoming a midwife. A certified nurse midwife is one path that includes a nursing degree and a master's degree.
You have both.
Yeah. We also have licensed midwives that are licensed by the state. That go through apprenticeship models, which is what I started in Humboldt doing apprenticing home birth because I really wanted that experience as at the beginning of my career. So are we, healers throughout the lifeline? Yes. Can we treat women in all phases of their life? Yes. If we know red raspberry leaf is a tonic for the uterus, is it just limited to pregnancy and postpartum? No.
Okay.
Yeah, that wisdom serves us in serving our patients at any time in their life. It was just yesterday I had a 75-year-old patient starting her on vaginal estrogen for the first time, which we can talk about more later. But talking about starting menopausal hormone therapy and the same conversation talking about her mothering her child and what it's been like being a mom. These conversations have that common thread of being with woman, which is the definition of midwife, right? So there's so many different ways to be a midwife. And believe me, I got so many different takes on it when I was delivering babies about what that meant, having to describe what kind of midwife I was working in a teaching hospital in Denver at the time and not just delivering in a barn like where Jesus was born. So just the public perception of what a midwife is, I felt like there was a lot of education as I was delivering babies during that 20 years in my career. And then getting to the point where I'm not delivering babies anymore. Mm-hmm. And never say never, I hope to at some point down the line. But as a more functioning as a women's healthcare nurse practitioner mm-hmm. now.
You're delivering elders.
Yeah.
You're delivering crones.
Birthing the crones.
You are birthing the crones. Yeah. This is my guest, Allison Thorne. You're listening to A Conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're going to take a quick break and come back and continue our conversation and open up our phones for your questions at 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these broken wings and learn to fly all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to arise. You're only waiting for this moment to arise. Blackbird singing in the dead of night. Take these sunken eyes and learn to see. To see all your life. You are only waiting for this moment to be free. Blackbird, blackbird fly. Blackbird, fly. Into the light of a dark black.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our number is 805-781-3875. As we continue our conversation with Allison Thorne, certified nurse midwife, holistic healer, focusing on women's health. I'm not going to change subjects, but I wonder if men are jealous that there is with women an entire practice just for women. But you talk about the practice that you do today because you took this leap of faith and set out on your own, and your work is a holistic healthcare model. Can you describe what it is that you're doing now?
Yeah, holistic health, body, mind, and spirit, okay. Right? So that's an easy way to put it in a nutshell. When we're talking about the body and perimenopause, really focusing on the physical symptoms, mm-hmm. hormonal balance, we're talking about looking at labs, we're talking about all the things that we can do to support the body through diet, lifestyle, exercise, hormones. This is about mm-hmm. all the things that we can use as metrics to make sure that the body is being well supported. Mm-hmm. What is your cholesterol? Where is your sugar? Are you up to date with your mammogram? Are we getting all the testing that we need? Do you need your colonoscopy scheduled?
So you're doing the traditional medical piece.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So all of those things. Yeah, it's upon your provider to educate you on when those tests should be drawn and to recommend them and give you the menu of services. And so often what I'm hearing again and again is that hormones are not part of that conversation, that women are going to see their healthcare provider and hormones isn't even mentioned. And really, my mission is to try to educate people that we should be starting these conversations for women in their 30s.
Right. So let's talk about perimenopause and what that actually is. Because I'm assuming that there's this period of time where you have your birthing years or your ability to give birth. And then does perimenopause start while that's still, like, did the two happen at the same time?
Yeah.
Is that too weird of a question?
It's actually woven together. Like, it's okay. A continuum. Like, there aren't discrete beginning and ends.
Okay.
Yes. And so childbearing years to perimenopause to menopause to postmenopause.
Right.
It's all woven together, right? Mm-hmm. It's all a continuum. Mm-hmm. And I have clients that I'm working with on perimenopause symptom management who want to get pregnant. Mm-hmm. So fertility is part of that conversation, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And then we come back into pregnancy management. Then we're in postpartum. Then we're picking back up on perimenopause afterwards. So it's not a linear journey.
And it's not in sections where you finish one and you go on to the next.
Right. And you don't have these discrete markers to know exactly when you have transitioned.
Okay.
And because of that, we know there are trends of the hormone behavior of hormones in a woman's body throughout the course of her life. In adolescence, it's a complete storm. And then most women get into cyclical rhythm throughout those childbearing reproductive years. And then in perimenopause, it's another complete storm.
What are the, can you just give me an age spectrum when that starts to be experienced?
Yeah, the average age of menopause in the U.S. is 50, 51, 52 years old. And so perimenopause can be plus or minus 10 years.
Okay.
Yeah. And what we're seeing is that the hormones are off the Richter scale. And women will have symptoms during this time that usually brings them into care, that I'm having trouble sleeping, I don't feel like myself is
That's one of these common
big ones, yeah. The irritability, the anxiety, the depression. And so often they're being offered SSRIs as a first line of treatment.
Antidepressants.
Yeah, antidepressants as a first line of treatment. When we know progesterone's starting to decline, sometimes at 35 years old, we know progesterone is starting to decline. So part of my messaging is, why not start with progesterone? Progesterone before Prozac. Let's try the progesterone.
That should be your mantra, your bumper sticker.
So this is all part of treating the body, right? Mm-hmm. Getting onto the biomarkers, getting into really helping support optimum health just by treating the physical animal. Even a woman without symptoms, though, we know her hormones are starting to change. And when we start approaching the age of menopause at 51, we can start talking about estrogen and progesterone as recommended for all the other benefits of estrogen. Progesterone we give to help prevent endometrial cancer when a woman is on estrogen, but there are benefits to taking progesterone even earlier for that mood support, for that sleep support. You can't take estrogen without progesterone, but you can take progesterone without estrogen. And this is if you have a uterus. If you had a hysterectomy, it's a different story. You don't need to have the progesterone. I like the progesterone more than the estrogen, personally.
For the overall benefits?
It helps me sleep.
Okay.
Yeah.
And, of course, I'm thinking about, you know, the history of the HRT and people's concerns about being on hormones. So how has that changed, and how has it changed your attitude about the use?
The Women's Health Initiative that came out in the early 2000s. Was awful for women's health, for menopausal hormonal therapy. Providers everywhere started backpedaling. So in the 80s and 90s, we were saying, oh, hormones, estrogen is the answer for your hot flashes and to protect your health. Then the Women's Health Initiative came out, and based on poor data selection, recommendations were made to hold off. And this is when we saw the rise in bioidentical hormones offered through compounding pharmacies, which is more of a marketing term than anything. But they compounding pharmacies did a great job of filling that gap for 10 years until the data sets from the Women's Health Initiative were reevaluated. And when we took out variables of age and pre-existing disease, we were able to see that estrogen's very safe and actually recommended. You have estrogen receptors in every organ system in the body. And there's no other hormone that should we see a decline, we would just let fall off the cliff like that. Like your thyroid hormone starts falling off, we give you thyroid hormone. Insulin starts falling off, we give you insulin. Estrogen starts falling off.
That's just aging.
It's time to think about taking estrogen. Yeah. And it's not for everybody. And there are some contraindications to it. It's a nuanced conversation.
Yeah.
And I was recently thinking about posting on my Instagram, hippies and hormones, because there is quite a bit of resistance in the natural-based community against big pharma. And I totally get it. I myself kind of dragged my feet a little bit. But when we look at the science and we look at the data and we look at wanting to live longer and healthier, estrogen will do that for you.
With progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you talked, so there's the body.
Yeah.
Let's go mind and spirit in that. My guest is Allison Lorne. You're listening to Central Coast. I was going to talk about KCBX. I want to say the conversation with a reluctant therapist. Allison, you talked the three parts of the holistic health, mind, body, and spirit. Yeah. So we talked about body and the hormone piece. Let's talk about how you also include mind and spirit in your practice.
Yes, I love it.
Can someone move through the transitions of menopause and perimenopause without the hormone replacements with the mind and spirit piece?
Yeah, of course.
And herbs.
Yes, certainly. Herbs do a great job of treating specific symptoms. I have a line of tinctures. They're available at Circuits of the Garden and at Green Omen Apothecary in Atascadero. And treating hot flashes and low libido and irritability. We can treat symptom-specific concerns with herbs, but when we're looking at full-body systems, mm-hmm. estrogen does a much better job of being able to support you overall in the long term in every organ system of the body. But of course, this is about patient-centered care. It's about meeting patients where they are and providing a level of care that meets them the way they want to be cared for. Mm-hmm. It's not one size fits all. And if a patient comes to me and doesn't want to be on hormones, there's still so much more we can do. Getting into the mind side of things, for the emotional aspect of the catch-up we're dealing with when women have been divorced from their bodies for so much of their householding years, and then come in wanting to tackle these bigger questions of how do I deal with all these emotions that are coming through. Mm-hmm. I'm emotionally labile. I have unexpected outbursts. Mm-hmm. I don't want to listen to my husband breathing anymore. I just have irritability and anxiety and rage, and it's not functional. What do I do about it? Somatics for me was a huge life-changing journey. Shout out to Leslie Bullock if you're listening.
She's actually going to be on the show in a couple weeks.
Oh my God.
So we'll just carry on from here.
Leslie, I love you. Yes, a trauma-informed therapist that walked me through trauma recovery for years and then referred me into somatics as a way to get more in touch with my body, as a way to get past the storytelling, the dialoguing, the resistance. I'm really good at talking my way out of a tight spot and not getting pushed into a corner. And somatics, using the body as a map, the body's always in real time. The mind is forward and backwards and stuck in story. And can we connect the mind and the body following the line of story with the map of the body, tracking emotions in the body and finding pathways for release so that we're not just stuffing these emotions and we're not just living with years and years of stuffing these emotions, of centuries and centuries of being groomed to be people pleasers as women in a society that doesn't make room for women's voice, women's processing of their emotions. Mm-hmm. So using the body and finding movement and gesture and posture to get these feelings out and bringing in a level of self-compassion that's accessible once we witness the self-abandonment that we went through just trying to survive.
And then how does the spirit then layer into the process?
We as humans are always seeking meaning. It's part of our natural build to want to find something to tap into that gives us a sense of our being significant. Mm-hmm. And this is about legacy. It's about lineage. It's about leadership. It's about doing work for yourself so that we can help uplift others. Living by example in a way that helps younger generations find inspiration in how we're living. We don't need to keep passing on misogyny and people pleasing and shrinking. And it's like upon us now more than ever, young women are waking up to how much grooming has been going on. And in our position, we get to say, yes, girls, and check it out. When you're in your 50s, you're on the brink of a level of expansion that's bigger than anything else you've ever gone through. You start giving zero F's mm-hmm. about what other people think about how you're living your life. You start living with more authenticity and integrity and alignment with your values, unwilling to compromise just to make other people comfortable.
So tell me, Allison, how does your experience working in women's health from the menopause, perimenopause, postmenopause transitions changed you?
I'm in the thick of it. Okay. I'm in the thick of it. Looking back, this is always so embarrassing to admit that I didn't realize I was in perimenopause. My anxiety peaked when I was 40. The anxiety around the dentist, my poor dental support at the time. There was so much anxiety that led me into my trauma recovery work and led me into somatics. But looking back, I wish I had realized that it had been perimenopause, that I could have used progesterone back then.
But did it surprise you that you'd been through all these trainings and done all this work, and even for you, this experience wasn't, you weren't prepared even through your training for it?
Yeah. Isn't that, yeah, mm-hmm. that's the rub. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's embarrassing to admit. We don't get a lot of training in school on menopause and mm-hmm. perimenopause. A few hours lecture, really. Yeah. And it would be rare to me that a woman would come in and want hormones. Mm-hmm. I was working in reproductive health, seeing women for childbirth and their annual exams. And it was rare that I was having a conversation around menopause. Which is why I'm like, we have to help women find the empowerment voice to advocate for themselves when they go to see their provider, that they ask about perimenopause. Should I start thinking about this? I want some information about it.
But also, how does, because we talk about, you know, spirit and mind, I'm still stuck on those two, in a culture where women themselves don't want to talk about the aging process or to age and are doing everything to not age through, you know, plastic surgery and things to, how do those two things, how can you move into your power, as you say, and accept, right, your position in your 50s and 60s if you yourself are fighting the aging in transition process?
Yeah, internalized ageism, that's what we're talking about, right? And this is, it's so often that women start complaining about feeling invisible.
Mm-hmm. I remember when my mom said it, she was around 60 the first time I heard her say that.
Not seeing themselves as sexual beings anymore, not seeing themselves as desirable, not seeing themselves as relevant, seeing their own voices as being worthy. Maybe it's just the rebel in me, but to me, that makes me want to push back harder. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. like, oh, hell no, that's not where I'm going. And I do push back at convention. And it makes me say, to whose benefit are we swallowing that pill? It only serves to maintain misogyny and to maintain the patriarchy, that women aren't empowered. Mm-hmm. And it's not just about women and empowerment. It's women in power. We need women in power. This is going to get political. We need to see women in power, and being empowered is part of that.
So I guess I'm seeing kind of this, I don't know if it's a contradiction or a dissonance, because again, many women will say, I don't want it. I don't want to talk about age. I don't want to think about age. I don't want to think about the grin. Just dye my hair and, you know, keep the Botox coming. And I want to stay in this place because that's what makes me feel strong and powerful. And the idea that I'm going to let that go feels like defeat. How does that story change?
Oh, right. Like defeat. Like I'm giving in. I gave up.
Yeah.
I question who benefits from selling the Botox. Yeah. Who's really benefiting from the anti-aging industry? Capitalism. Yeah. You needing to look a certain way is an artifact of a hyperfixation with youth in mm-hmm. our culture. And we're seeing how toxic that is. And to me, that's all the more reason to say no to it. Mm-hmm. And to each their own. This is what my path is. First and foremost, you need to be validated. You need to be told that you're beautiful. You need to be celebrated in however it works for you to feel that way. Mm-hmm. And if you're curious about what that next step, how do I let go of some of this? Then it's really a conversation about what is beauty to you, and are you using your own locus of control to define beauty, or are you looking for external validation?
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Allison Lorne, holistic healer, certified nurse midwife, and registered nurse nurse. And we're talking about kind of the process of aging for women through perimenopause, menopause, and postmenopause, and how little has been done to really support that journey, and how you've kind of created this practice that is stick with mind, body, and spirit. But then you also kind of lead, you said you'd led a group of women to Salem. Tell me how that fits in with your holistic practice. Like, who's drawn to those kind of journeys?
Oh my gosh. And we just had another somatic magic retreat, 2 weeks ago at Crow's End, which is really beautiful. Yeah, at the heart of my spiritual life, I lead a coven in Atascadero, Mystic Oak Coven, shout out. And we hold regular ceremonies that follow the calendar of the year. So set on the solstices and equinoxes and the cross quarters. Our next ceremony will be spring equinox, March 20th. And that ceremony is at Green Omen in Atascadero. These were women that came into the coven through years of teaching the history of witchcraft, teaching on the witch trials. And Rihanna and I, the owner of Green Omen, decided to start this retreat to Salem as a really impactful pilgrimage into history, into the history of women as healers, into the history of women standing up in politics, standing up to systems. Getting out there felt like a real confirmation of our coven, of our community, of steeping into the process of somatic orientation. When we're talking about working magic and the ability to affect our vibration, our frequency internally, then somatics is the path for that. Again, we're coming back to the body. Mm-hmm. What am I feeling? How is it showing up in the body? And can I open up to be a portal to run more energy, more light, more love through my personal experience?
And so In your work, in our last couple minutes, if someone comes to see you and they're thinking, well, I want to be seen as a woman outside of Western medicine, but still want to have a medical piece, what can they expect if someone calls you and says, I want to become one with my body and enjoy my aging?
I say, yes, yeah. You're my perfect ideal client. Come aboard. Yeah. It's really about an intake and an assessment, right? Uh-huh. Evaluating where you are, looking at your history, your personal medical history, your family medical history, and the body piece of this, the physical piece of it is the easiest place to start, right? Mm-hmm. What are your current concerns and complaints in your body? And then getting into the emotional side of things, how do we see how that relates to your, what's your relationship with your body? Mm-hmm. And do you have feelings about your body? Do you have feelings about what your body's trying to communicate? Are any of your current conditions, concerns, desires around your body rooted in emotional patterns and emotional attitudes you have towards yourself? And can we start building a more positive relationship with you and your body? Can we bring in more love, more self-acceptance, and more self-compassion?
Mm. Well, and I love this visual that I'm getting, that women have this experience when, if they're having a child, when they're birthing a child and growing a child, that is almost this spiritual, it is, not almost, it is a spiritual experience of giving life. And then it kind of gets lost in the whole business of raising this human being in a very complex society where women do have to kind of put a cap on it, it seems like, especially if they're having to work full time and raise a family just to survive. And it's not until perimenopause, menopause, like you said, that it gets to get unleashed again, that you can take a breath, and it's almost like reconnecting with your womb through that experience. This hour goes way too fast. So if people want to get in touch with you, Allison, how do they find you?
Oh, thanks so much for asking. Mm-hmm. Healwithallison.com, ALLISON.com. There's the Holistic Perimenopause Guide. That's a free download on the website. I'm teaching an in-person perimenopause portal workshop at Dharma Yoga in Paso on April 12th. Instagram, Allison Lorne, CNM.
Mm-hmm. LORNE. So is it Heal with Allison?
Heal.
Healwithallison.com.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you so much for spending this hour with me. It went too fast. Yep. We'll have to come back again and talk about your next coven meeting.
Oh, that'd be fun.
I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. You can send me an email to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Find me on Instagram or Facebook. You can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast or show to share with others. As always, thank you so much for being a part of this community and supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.